Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. New York had a glimmer of good news on Sunday. Its one-day death toll from COVID-19 fell for the first time. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's still too early to draw any conclusions from that one data point, especially as public health officials are saying that nationwide, this coming week is likely to be the hardest yet. So we want to take you on a journey today to four cities in different parts of America to hear how they're doing. And some familiar voices in their communities will help us do just that. Public radio hosts. So this hour on Point, hosts from Detroit, Los Angeles, Miami, and St. Louis on COVID-19 in their cities now. And we are going to start first today right in Detroit, Michigan, where Stephen Henderson joins us. He is host of Detroit Today on WDET. Stephen, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Meghna, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
We're getting through. That's all I could muster at this point, right? We're still here.
still here is a victory. One foot in front of the other every day is progress, is what I keep telling myself. So tell me, what's it like in Detroit now?
Meghna, it's really sad here. There's no other way to describe it. The level of fear that people are feeling, I think, is incredibly, incredibly palpable, but also the sense of loss that is just piling up on all of us every day. I don't think there's anybody I know who now at this point doesn't know at least two people who have lost their lives to coronavirus. And each day we continue to just sort of get more bad news about how fast the virus is spreading here, about how badly it's impacting communities of color and people who are poor here in the city of Detroit. We are in the thick of it still. And I think for all of us, the question remains, you know, when will we get through to the other side? When will we get to the other side of this curve that everyone is talking about, where things are starting to get better and not just worse?
Right. And so the thing I keep wondering about is that the other side of the curve is the other side of the curve regarding the illness itself. But then there's this sort of flat land of unemployment, right? I'm seeing here that like, what, 1 in 10 Michigan workers are out of work already?
Yes. We've always said here in Michigan that when the country catches a cold, we get pneumonia. Economically speaking, the economy here is so dependent on certain sectors, and those sectors are terribly affected by all kinds of fluky economic downturns. But this kind of economic downturn has been absolutely brutal on manufacturing, for instance, which is our kind of lifeblood here in Michigan and especially in Detroit. Mm-hmm. We are going to get it worse than anybody else. And coronavirus is not an exception to that. In fact, it's an inflection point. It's a highlight of just how sensitive our economy is. And so, as you point out, when we get past the health scare and the loss and the mourning that is inflicting on us, we will face this incredible uphill climb to rebuild an economy that can sustain the people who live here.
Yeah. Well, you know, tomorrow on the show, we are going to be taking a deep dive into this issue of the now epidemic of unemployment in the United States. So listeners right now, if you have lost your job because of the coronavirus pandemic, you know, give us a call and let us know what your story is. We're at 617-353-0683. That's the number where you can leave us a voicemail telling us your story about job loss, how you're struggling through right now, and whether you think it had to be this way, whether unemployment had to come along with controlling a pandemic. Again, that's 617-353-0683, and that's for tomorrow's show. Now, Stephen, hang on here for just a second. You're in Detroit. I want to jump over to Los Angeles, where Madeline Brand joins us. She's host of Press Play with Madeline Brand on KCRW. Madeline, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Meghna.
Hi, and hello to all of California. First of all, Madeline, I'm seeing here that Los Angeles is considered now the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic in California. Tell me more about that.
Right. Well, we haven't seen the crest yet. I think officials are still bracing for that to come in maybe a week out. Mayor Garcetti has said that we are 12 days or so behind New York, and we see what's happening in New York, and so we can just do the math. However, there are other reasons why we might not be like New York. As you know, Los Angeles is a very different city than New York. We're not all crammed in together in big apartment complexes. We're not all on the subway, and we're just not as crowded. We're a more spread out city. And so that could be one thing that mitigates the disaster that we see happening, unfolding in New York City, as well as the fact that we in California began our so-called safer at home, our self-quarantining a lot earlier.
Right.
So we began, we're entering our third week of that now,
yeah,
of staying at home. And a lot of people are abiding by that. There have been some who haven't. And so the mayor has had to close, or the governor has closed the beaches and the parks here in Los Angeles are all closed. Riverside has basically banned, Riverside County has taken the extreme measure of banning all gatherings of people who are not families living together. And everybody has to wear face masks outside.
Wow.
So, yeah. Or there could be fines or arrests or what have you. They're not fooling around over in Riverside. And here in Los Angeles, the mayor has recommended that everybody wear face masks when they go outside.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more of that in a lot of American cities. You know what, though, Madeline? I mean, yes, California was ahead of things in terms of putting into place a statewide quarantine. But I know that you had to press Mayor Garcetti about why certain places like farmers markets had been kept open, which are really important gathering places for Californians, especially in Los Angeles.
No, it was really shocking last weekend to see images of the Brentwood Farmers Market just packed with people, not maintaining a 6-foot distance at all. And so on Monday, last Monday, I asked the mayor about it. He was on the show, and he said he would look into it. And then that evening, they closed down all the farmers markets until further notice. Some of them have been able to open up again if they've been able to prove that they have a way of keeping people separate. And so I think what they're going to have to do is something that the grocery stores do, which is limit the people who can come in, maintain a very strict distancing policy. But a lot of them are turning, a lot of farmers markets and restaurants are now turning into offering delivery of organic produce or farmers market type produce in boxes. And a lot of grocery stores are, a lot of restaurants rather, are turning into grocery stores, de facto grocery stores. So it's interesting to see how people are adapting economically. I can go further into that if you want. But while we're talking about the absolute disaster health-wise of this disease, economically in Los Angeles, it is a catastrophe as well. And I think that has been the focus so far because we haven't seen the numbers yet, as I said earlier, that they're seeing in New York City in terms of deaths. But it's the numbers are on the way up.
So I'm seeing here that statewide in California, as of Tuesday, so last Tuesday on March 31st, 1.6 million Californians filed unemployment claims. I mean, it's a huge number. So what's happening there in Los Angeles?
Well, in Los Angeles, it's just hitting everybody.
Yeah.
And in particular, when you look at the movie industry, that's over right now. That's dead, except for maybe animation. That's, you know, doing well because you can do that, I guess, by yourself. You don't need a whole set full of people. But when it comes to filming, movies, TV shows, commercials, any of that, that's over. That's gone. And it's just been like a nuclear bomb set off in Los Angeles and in Hollywood. And all of the attendant businesses that rely on the movie industry, the catering, the hairstyling, the costuming, the deliveries, all of that is gone too. So really, Hollywood has never seen anything like that. We're hearing talk that movie theaters might never reopen. And so it's who knows what's going to happen when we all crawl out of this. But things are going to change forever, I think, here in Los Angeles.
You know,
Stephen and Madeline, even though you're in two very different parts of the country, obviously what I'm hearing here is that there are industries and sectors that are core to where both of you live. I mean, it's how the people in your cities identify the very meaning of, like, what does it mean to be a Los Angelino, or what does it mean to be a Detroiter? And are people sort of, Stephen, just give me a quick answer here. Are people worried that like they got to wrap their heads around, like, is that very sort of self-definition of community changing a little bit here?
Oh, I think it absolutely will. And I think we all believe that manufacturing will have a substantial rebound after this. I mean, people will want things again and want to buy things. And so that drives that part of the economy. That's going to help us a lot. But here in Detroit, for instance, one of the things that had been taking place over the last decade was a significant economic rebound in terms of commerce in the city, and all kinds of restaurants and shops that were opening up and really starting to make a go of it here in the city, in certain parts of the city in particular. And those, I think, may be casualties of this. A lot of them are just not in the kind of financial shape to be able to go away for a month or two and then come back. So that's going to really change the way this city feels for an awful lot of people.
Right. Well, Madeline, we've got a minute to go before I've got to let you go, because you've got a show to do. But just, you know, how have you been doing? How have you been coping through all of this?
Well, I'm fairly well. I'm healthy, so that's good. And my family's healthy, so knock on wood, that's going well. We have moved our broadcasting into my house. I'm broadcasting to you from my little office studio here. And all of our producers are scattered. So it's a strange feeling to feel that you are now living apart, trying to connect, and everything feels upside down. You know, nobody really knows what's going to happen once we get out of this.
Well, Madeline, thank you so much for being connected with us today down the line here.
My pleasure.
Madeline Brand, host of Press Play with Madeline Brand on KCRW in Los Angeles. Take good care, Madeline. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Stephen Henderson, host of Detroit Today at WDET. Stand by for just a second. We got a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we're hearing from public radio hosts in four different cities across the United States about how their cities are experiencing the COVID-19 global pandemic, especially as public health officials warn that this coming week may be the toughest that the United States has seen so far. I'm joined today from Detroit by Stephen Henderson. He's host of Detroit Today on WDET. And Stephen, you know, as goes with any challenge or crisis, including a pandemic, different communities are disproportionately impacted, even in a case where, you know, a virus doesn't actually care who it infects. Because of human society, the impact can be very disproportionate. And you had mentioned communities of color there in Detroit. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. The state here started last week releasing numbers of infection rate and deaths from coronavirus with racial demographics attached to them. And I think everybody was really taken aback by just how disproportionate the number of African Americans is among those both infected and those dying. 35% of the victims of fatalities from coronavirus are African American, and 45% of the infections. That's while African Americans are only 14% of the overall state population. And, you know, you're not necessarily surprised by these kinds of numbers in a society where race still correlates very strongly with poverty, where things like systemic racism and systemic poverty kind of combine to trap people in circumstances that make life more difficult. But it's especially painful during something like this to see that those two villains can combine in a way that is stealing people from us in very cruel ways in this city. We've had a number of prominent deaths here in the city, including a police captain, a very prominent community leader who I counted as a friend. And, you know, we continue each day to see that in the African-American community here, this means something really different. It means something really outsized compared to other communities. And there's an anger, I think, that attends that realization that these disparities, which exist and that we manage all the time, have now had incredibly swift and incredibly damaging, fatal consequences for people in our community.
Stephen, do you mind if I ask, could you tell us more about that police captain who is your friend?
Sure. The police captain is someone I actually just kind of knew. There was another person, the community leader, who was a friend of mine,
yeah,
who died.
Yeah.
But the police captain was the person who actually had headed homicide here in the city of Detroit, who contracted the disease and was dead within just a matter of days. Again, a big loss for this community, a surprise inside the department. The police department here is absolutely crushed by the work that it needs to be doing right now, but also the exposure that it has to this disease. You've got a lot of the department out on quarantine. You've had a lot of illnesses. Our police chief is positive for the coronavirus and is quarantining right now as well. The community leader who was a friend of mine who died was somebody who just absolutely loved Detroit and Detroiters and took every opportunity to lift us all up, to be our best selves, to see our best selves, to understand that there was value in this city and its people, and to think that this disease just came along and snatched him away from us is something I think we're all still just trying to get our minds around, let alone try to get our emotions in check around it. It's just it's all almost unfathomable.
And that person's name?
Marlo Stoudemire was his name. Yes.
And just tell me a little bit more about him. Like how did he lead the community? How did he lift you all up, as you were saying?
I mean, it was in a million little ways, really. His work was as a strategist and a consultant, but he was somebody who always was looking for the way to tell positive Detroit stories. Just last year, he launched this effort to make sure that he was telling the story of African Americans in the city who are part of the recovery here, that he felt like those were stories that weren't getting the air that other stories were getting. And so he started a Facebook page and was going on television and radio talking about, hey, we're part of this too, and we want the city to be better for us as well, and we're playing our part. It's a great example of the approach that he took to life and to his work here in the city, this idea that this is a place that needs lifting up, and the people here are people who need lifting up. And to think that we were unable to sustain his life because of this virus, this guy who sustained us for so long, is really difficult.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Stephen. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, I think this is one of the truths about this pandemic, which will settle on people as it kind of continues to burn on, that we're all going to know somebody. And it's going to take a lot to sort of understand the long-term impact of that. But hang on here for a second, Stephen, if you could, because I want to just trot over to St. Louis now, if I could, where Sarah Fenske joins us. She's host of St. Louis on the Air from KWMU. And Sarah, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, you heard Stephen and Madeline earlier sort of describe how this pandemic is changing the cities where they live, all the way down to the personal level. First of all, I mean, have you seen yet in St. Louis that kind of change, or is St. Louis kind of holding its breath in anticipation?
We are still in that holding our breath stage. In the city of St. Louis, we've all been, for the most part, sheltering at home for 3 full weeks now. But we're still not going to hit our peak of cases, according to most of the models here, for 2 to maybe even 4 weeks, according to that model from the University of Washington. St. Louis will be the last major city in the country to hit that peak. And so we have just this period of anxiety, trying to get ready for that moment. Are we ready? How bad is it going to be?
Well, you know, so I can understand the anxiety of that watching. It's like watching a wave coming towards you.
Coming your way.
But, you know, on the other hand, that lead time also allows ideally a community to prepare, right? So what kind of preparations have been happening?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we are a very blue city in the middle of a very red state. And so in the greater St. Louis area, it's sort of this 5-county region. They put some very serious social distancing things in place. You know, the hospitals are working together very closely. All the churches canceled services, all the right kind of stuff. And yet we're in this state where it is only today that the governor, for the first time, is putting an order in effect that tells people to stay home. And there's a lot of concern about this order in that there are a lot of holes in it. Even non-essential businesses, as long as you have 10 people or fewer, are allowed to stay open in the state of Missouri. And so there's a question of, is the state's lack of preparedness on this going to be a problem, even in a city and a metro area that has tried to take it seriously?
Yeah, I mean, there's such a huge tension around this. First of all, I want to tell all Missouri folks, welcome to the partial lockdown, I guess.
Yes.
But the tension is like, okay, well, if it hasn't quite hit yet, maybe we don't need to change how we live so dramatically. But of course, the point is you got to change how you live dramatically now so that you reduce the impact when that wave finally hits, right?
Right. And we've had comparatively few deaths from this so far. I think as of Saturday, the latest numbers, there were only 29 deaths in Missouri, and 26 of those were in the St. Louis metro. And so I think for people who are living in rural Missouri, this feels like this this thing that doesn't affect them yet. And I think it's fair to say it will affect them, but they're not feeling it. And so, yeah, it's a lot harder maybe to take that seriously when you're not seeing any deaths in your community yet.
Yeah, well, I would implore everybody who hasn't yet had to make some pretty fundamental changes in how they live to please do take it seriously. I mean, like, we were just hearing Stephen describe how this is laying waste to Detroit. I mean, obviously, there's been so much news out of New York. Madeline was telling us that that Los Angeles may be transforming in real time. So it's going to happen somehow. We just maybe don't know the shape of the impact yet, right? In St. Louis. Is that what it feels like?
And I think the real concern in St. Louis is that we're going to see patterns like you see in Detroit. I think that the projections show that we are not going to get hit as hard as Detroit has. But we have some of the same demographics as Detroit has. This is a poor city, and it's a city that has a lot of people of color who are living in situations that are much less affluent than the white side of town. And we're already seeing that part of town getting so much harder hit. And so that's a real concern for people, that this is going to spread like wildfire through an area that already has so much fewer resources, so much fewer connections to healthcare and things like that.
Well, I mean, Stephen and Sarah, this is a chance for you guys to talk with each other. Like, Stephen, I mean, not that you're talking at Sarah at all, but like, what would you tell her listeners in St. Louis?
So, you know, the thing that I think has really hurt us here in Detroit is the ineffectiveness of the message to get people to stay at home early on. I feel really strongly that if we had done better with that here in Detroit, we might not be in the situation that we're in right now. It might not be so bad. We still, I mean, we continue to have some trouble with that in certain parts of the community where it's just hard to stay away from people. I mean, if you're poor, if you've got to go to work because you're an essential worker and you're poor, if you've got people you need to take care of, it's really hard to stay at home. And so that is making, I think it's making it easier for the virus to spread. The other thing that I think you've got to talk about here in Detroit, and I don't know what this looks like in other parts of the country, is, you know, we shut a lot of people's water off for non-payment here over the last several years as a way to shore up finances in the water and sewage department. I think we all knew that was a very poor decision, a very poor public health decision. But the way in which that is playing out now, when you have people who don't even have access to clean water, dealing with a pandemic, it's just not manageable. And yes, they're turning water back on to people's homes now. But those kinds of policies are really accelerating the damage here. And I don't know, again, whether other communities are in that kind of boat, but there are things that make this worse that I think we've kind of brought on ourselves through poor policy thinking.
I think, there's certainly some echoes of that here in St. Louis. There are such inequities in this area. And I think because of the movement in Ferguson, people were very conscious of this going in and vowed to do better. And yet, you know, the problems that are sort of built into the system here, just one example, the Ferguson Florissant School District, which handles the kids in the suburb that Michael Brown was from, they had put together a plan where buses would be going around dropping off lunches and things like that, so these kids wouldn't be going without while everyone was stuck at home. Well, one of the bus drivers in that district just died of coronavirus. And so now it's, you know, it was this good thing that was put in place to try to help a community that needs it. But is there a chance that something was spreading while this good program was there? The program has now been shut down. And the program in an area, the neighboring school district, has also been shut down. And so these inequities that are baked into our metro region are really rearing their heads in just a really sad way right now.
So there's no way, or is there a move to try and restart that program? It sounds like a real essential service that they were trying to provide.
Yeah, and this all just happened over the weekend. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, people will be huddling, I think, trying to figure this out. But obviously, no one wants to put the community more at risk of more spread of the disease. But certainly, people need food.
Yeah. You know, this is one thing that we've been noticing, that this pandemic, it does, it like finds whatever the cracks are, right, in your system, in your policies, in your communities, and it worms its way into those cracks and exposes even more sort of areas that we hadn't been paying enough attention to, or people we hadn't been providing enough support to. It's really kind of a disturbing revelation. But I guess my long-term question that I'll be asking myself and everyone who ever appears on this show for the next many months is like, now what are we going to do about it? But but Sarah, let me ask you, because we heard from Stephen and we heard from Madeline about the economic impact because of the pandemic. Are you feeling that yet in St. Louis?
You know, it's interesting. There are so many people, anecdotally, who are unemployed right now because of this. But there's a great concern within the state that the state unemployment numbers aren't even close to correct because the systems have been so swamped and they were so ill-prepared to handle all the claims coming in that we don't even have a handle on how many people are without work right now. And that's, I think, the truly scary part. The second scary part is that Missouri has among the very lowest unemployment benefits in the entire nation. Again, this is a very red state that just doesn't invest in those kind of, you know, that safety net. And so I think this is going to be a huge problem, and we're not yet sure of just how it's all going to play out, but it's going to be bad.
Well, you know, so even with the difficulty that people might be having filing in Missouri, I'm seeing here that the number of claims successfully received in Missouri in just the past 2 weeks equal more than half of the total number of unemployment claims the state received in all of 2019.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like these numbers aren't bad even without that. I mean, these numbers are terrible. And this was a state that, you know, we were doing okay, but the national economy, I think, was really humming along. I don't think anybody would have ever said Missouri was really humming even before this. And that makes this all so much worse.
Okay. Well, you know, I also want to remind listeners again that tomorrow we are going to be taking that deep dive into the impact that unemployment and job loss is going to have long term because of this global pandemic. So for tomorrow's show, folks, if you're listening right now and you've lost your job, give us a call. Send us a voicemail at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. And tell us, you know, when and how you lost your job. What had you been doing? How are you struggling through now? And whether or not you think it had to be this way. Again, whether mass unemployment had to come along with how we're managing a global pandemic. 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow's show. Sarah, we've got about 30 seconds before I got to let you go here, but how are you doing? And how are you guys all coping?
You know, I really can't complain. I think this has been so hard for so many people, and I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones. I get to keep working. Just having this show, getting to talk to people, has just felt like a real blessing. So I'm doing good.
You know, radio proving its worth as a medium for human connection is one of the silver linings here. So Sarah Fenske, host of St. Louis on the Air at KWMU. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Stephen, hang in here for another minute while we take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from Miami. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are hearing from four different cities across the United States this hour, from public radio hosts who serve their local audiences there, about what they're seeing, hearing, and experiencing as the COVID-19 global pandemic continues to grind on. I'm joined today by Stephen Henderson. He's with us from Detroit. He's host of Detroit Today at WDET. Stephen, you know, I should have asked you way earlier, what are listeners telling you? Have you had to actually add hours to your show because people are so hungry for information?
You know, we have four times since this all started added an extra hour in the afternoon. We're normally on from 9 to 10. We added a 2 to 3 p.m. hour just to have doctors on hand to answer people's medical questions. The number of questions that we've gotten from listeners about what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing, what kind of symptoms they should be worried about versus not so worried about, how they should be taking care of people around them who might be sick. It was really overwhelming. And so we added those hours to get doctors here to be able to answer those questions. And we were just flooded each time with calls from our listeners, because they really don't know everything that they feel like they should about how this is supposed to work. We also begin each day now asking people just to call and tell us how they're doing. Mm-hmm. Just tell us how they're adapting to all of this change. Think of all the things in our lives that are so dramatically different in just a few weeks' time. Everything seems turned on its head. I think one of the really powerful vehicles that we're offering to people on shows like this and on Point there in Boston is that human connection, the power of that human voice. We had the lieutenant governor here on the show last week, and he talked about the power of the human voice at a time like this, and that so many people are missing that because they live alone and they're not seeing people anymore. And so offering up this platform each day as a way to connect, just have any sort of connection with another human being, has been a real source of, I think, comfort for our listeners.
You know, I'm going to get up on my little local journalism soapbox here for a second, because before I had the great opportunity to join this team here at On Point, I spent 8 years hosting the local radio show here at WBUR, Radio Boston, and there is a profound sense of being connected to your local community and being an extremely important conduit for the dissemination of reliable, trustworthy information. I'm sounding like a fundraiser now. I don't mean to, but in moments of crisis, like just the sheer fact that people can pick up the phone and call you, Stephen, they can get a hold of the Lieutenant Governor on your show, that kind of thing. Like, it is one of those things that local journalism provides. It really helps knit a community together. So that's my soapbox. And I wanted to say thank you for doing that for Detroit and for Michigan. And thank you to all our local hosts who are joining us today, because it's a really important service. And I know people are really relying on you. So you guys are doing wonderful service. So hang on here for a second, Stephen, because now, as promised, we're going to go to Miami, where Luis Hernandez joins us. He's host of Sundial on WLRN. Luis, welcome to On Point.
And Meghna, thank you so much.
It's great to have you. In the pre-COVID world, Luis, we were actually supposed to be down in Miami. I think it was this very week doing the show from Miami. I'm so sorry we couldn't come down there, but I'm glad to have you on the program. How are you doing so far?
You know what? I mean, all things aside, doing the best I can, pushing forward like everybody else. Unlike a lot of other hosts, I'm still at the office, actually. I mean, that may change at some point, but, I'm here with just the engineer, my producers, all the reporters, the directors, everybody is working from home. So it's surreal in the sense that I appreciate being able to come into the office, but at the same time, I'm by myself.
Well, we are alone together in this new COVID-19 age. But it wasn't that long ago that the Florida governor finally issued that stay at home recommendation. So how much has that changed life in Miami?
You know, Miami actually had that order in place before the state did, and South Florida leaders kind of knew ahead of time. And it's not to say they still. There's a lot of criticism that they were still too late. We were in the month of March, which is really probably the biggest month for us because it's the time of year. Our weather is perfect. It's spring break. We have a lot of festivals. We had a lot of spring breakers here at the beginning. And it took a little while for leaders to say, wait a minute, you know, this area is probably going to get hit the hardest. And we are. Palm Beach County down through Miami-Dade County is the epicenter. We have the most cases, the most deaths. They knew and they decided, look, we got to stop. We got to stop everything, shut it down to protect our population. And then it was a couple weeks later, when the state followed. And the state actually is using a lot of the infrastructure that we set up, that Miami-Dade set up, on how to just shut it all down. So they took the playbook from Miami-Dade County and said, let's just do that statewide.
Okay. I'm seeing here that it's none too soon, right? Because according to the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation out of the University of Washington, that the projected peak for Florida is still a couple of weeks off, maybe around April 20th, 21st or so, right?
Yeah, we were talking about that today. Originally, they had it for early May, and then it just changed over the last couple of days to, I believe it was April 21st.
Okay. Well, so you know how earlier we spoke, Stephen was telling us about how, really core industries, manufacturing in Detroit, are feeling the profound impact of this. And we heard the same thing from Madeline about industries that help define Los Angeles. That's got to be happening in Miami, too. I mean, Miami is so internationally connected. I'm thinking like the travel and tourism industry, for example.
Yeah, listening to them, that's interesting. We do have different industries here, but I was thinking about that. I think for the most part, they'll take a hit, they'll be fine, but this is still very much a tourist destination. It's about the visitors. We hold a lot of conferences here, And it's about the tourists. And I think that when this all finally blows over and people feel confident traveling again, they'll still want to come down to South Florida. They'll still want to be on South Beach. They'll still want to go to Key West. I think the smaller local businesses are going to hurt a lot. They are hurting a lot right now. But they'll be, not to sound coarse, but I mean, you know, like restaurants, bars, nightclubs, they'll be replaced with other ones. But big, big industries, I think the only thing I'm wondering, you know, what might change is the cruise industry.
Right.
And they've taken a very big black eye over the last couple of weeks. I wonder what's going to happen with them.
I mean, so are cruise ships still trying to dock at the Port of Miami?
Yeah, we had, the last week we had two ships with COVID-19 cases and deaths reported on the ships. One was the Holland America Zandam from Argentina, docked in Port Everglades, which is Fort Lauderdale. And then the Coral Prince docked in Port Miami. And it's been, just a fiasco because the governor even said he doesn't want them, and there have been debates. Look, we already have a lot of cases. Here are these ships with sick people. Do we have enough beds? Which we do. And so each ship has to negotiate with the county, to be able to dock, and then what's going to happen with those sick people. And then the folks who have to catch flights to go home, they are being basically just taken straight from the dock, straight to the airport, not even going through the terminal, not getting on commercial flights, on chartered flights, and they're zipping out of here. But it's, and that's each ship has to call in and negotiate that deal and negotiate which hospitals have beds for those patients.
Wow. Okay, so cruise ships and the ongoing story there. I want to check in with you, Lewis, about, as we've been talking about unemployment in various parts of in all of these different cities here. Same thing in Florida, right? We're seeing a huge spike in the number of unemployment claims for Floridians, right?
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. This is a state that had, I think, like a lot, and nationally, the economy was really strong for a while. But again, since you're a service industry, when you're shutting down all the restaurants and then, it's all the businesses that are dependent on those other businesses. All of a sudden, you have a lot of people who are out of work because if you're not an essential worker, that's it. And so people, we're going to be looking at today, actually, filing for unemployment in Florida and the fact that the state website continues to crash and has a lot of problems. Actually, there was an audit done on that site last year, and the audit said, you got problems, you need to fix them. And here we are now facing, a system that cannot hold it. They're actually now sending out paper applications to file for unemployment. But one of the deadlines passed. And so you're going to have a lot of people who are not going to have benefits, at least for a little while. And we just passed the first of the month. We were looking at who has to pay their rent and mortgage and who can negotiate that. And so, it is a lot of people because, a lot is closed.
Yeah. All of the cities that we've been talking to today, they're big, bustling, beating hearts of the states that they're in. I mean, what is it like to walk around Miami right now?
I was thinking about the only other times I've ever seen anything like this is after a hurricane, when everything is not everything, but most things are shut down and there's very little traffic. There's very little of any people are not moving around. The stark difference, though, of course, after a hurricane, there's damage and debris. And sometimes you can't even get around because certain roads are shut off. This is like, a big chunk of the population just disappeared and everything froze in place. And, you look at the beaches, they're all closed. I've never seen Florida beaches empty. I mean, you see a cop, but that's it. Duval Street and Key West, you'll see construction crews because the city decided, now's a good time to catch up on some of our projects. But you're used to seeing visitors, tourists, the bars are open, the nightclubs are open, there are festivals. And, Wynwood, empty. The only other time I can remember anything like this is after a storm.
I feel like this is maybe You're the Floridian, so you tell me if I'm wrong. But it feels like the analogy that I want to reach to is like this is a slow motion category five that's just parking itself over all of us for a long time. And we don't know when it's going to move off.
That is actually no, that's a great way to describe it. And that's the scary part, because with a storm, you know when it's coming. You see it coming. You can prepare. It'll take a day or two to pass. And then it's a couple of weeks of recovery or more, depending on how hard you're hit. This is one of those where, like, how long is this going to last? How long are we going to have to keep going like this? And not having that answer really makes it it tests your patience and your sanity.
But you know what? I mean, it does. And that's absolutely happening in everyone's lives. But I think, you know, in Florida, in Miami, in Detroit, in St. Louis, in Los Angeles, all of these cities have gone through multiple challenges over many, many decades, centuries even. And like, I don't mean to sound like a Pollyanna, Lewis, but like, we'll keep going until we keep, as long as we have to keep going, right?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question. I mean, I think anywhere, it's not, Miami's not unique in that sense, you know, but we're ready. And this is a city with, you know, a lot of immigrants, and they know what it's like when you arrive in this country and you don't have much and you got to roll up your sleeves and just work. And so it's like, hey, they're ready to get back, and whatever it is, they'll rebuild. And when a storm comes, and you see this a lot in the Caribbean too, with folks from the Caribbean, when a storm comes, destroys a lot, you know what? You just rebuild.
Well, Lewis Hernandez, host of Sundial on WLRN in Miami, it was great to talk with you, Lewis. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Magda. Appreciate it.
Hey, Stephen, so we've got about 3 minutes left here. I want to just spend some time wrapping up with you. Again, mm-hmm. I do not want to be like a foolish optimist here because, look, Detroit is a perfect example to the rest of the country about how bad things happen, and they happen a lot sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, even in the midst of all that, when you look out at your fellow Detroiters, I mean, like, what are some of the lessons that you're drawing from how they're dealing with this crisis right now?
Well, I mean, we talk all the time about resilience in this city. I mean, it's something that if you're born here, I think it's part of your DNA because things here are tough. It's a tough place to survive all the time. And we're used to things not going our way. We're used to things being very, very hard. So this is, you know, just another chapter in that story in some ways. Now, it's a darker chapter than I can ever remember us facing before. It is taking a bigger toll on us, both in terms of our health and finances than other things. But you're absolutely right that I every day see somebody doing something absolutely extraordinary to help themselves or their neighbors or their families. I see all kinds of people thinking of things in different ways and trying to think up ways that after we get past this, we can make things different. I think the conversation, for instance, about water and access mm-hmm. to clean water in this city will be very different after this because, you know, we're learning a lesson that none of us would ever have wanted to learn. But I think the thing that is happening is telling us that we've got to do this differently. And so, you know, we're getting up each day. And like I said, I greet the listeners right now with good day to begin the program, because I keep saying any day that we're able to come together and have a conversation about what's going on and connect with each other is indeed a good day, just by definition. And that's, I think, in the back of our minds, one of the things that just keeps us going forward.
Well, good day to you, Stephen. Mm-hmm.
Good day to you too, Magna.
Stephen Henderson, host of Detroit Today at WDET. He's also a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist as well. It's been such a privilege to have you on the program, Stephen. Thank you so very much.
It's always great to be here. Thanks.
Well, folks, as I've said a couple of times this hour, tomorrow we are going to be doing that deep dive into the epidemic of unemployment in the United States right now. So if you have lost your job due to to the coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic. We want to hear from you, your stories about how you're coping, what it's been like to try to file for benefits, and whether or not you think it had to be this way. Did mass unemployment have to come along with managing a pandemic? Call us at 617-353-0683, 617-353-0683. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.